This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime. Our first story this week is The Witch of Mill Hollow from Let George Do It. That episode aired June 5th, 1950. After that, it's Johnny Madero, Pier 23, and Fatal Auction, his story from June 26th, 1947.
Personal notice. Changes my stock in trade. If the job's too tough for you to handle, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details.
Standard Oil Company of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West, invites you to Let George Do It. The Witch of Mill Hollow, another adventure of George Valentine.
My dear Mr. Valentine, my name is Silas Orrick, and from my experience as editor of a small-town weekly newspaper, I know that I'll have to say but a few words in order to attract your attention. Let me only preface my statement with the remark that Mill Hollow is just an ordinary town with an ordinary number of secrets and the ordinary amount of gossip. That until a year ago, we all got along quite well together, without any disturbing element to ruffle the surface of our peaceful existence. Further, that this is the year 1950, and what happened seems almost impossible. What happened, it did. And yet now, as of this morning, our town is once more peaceful. The disturbing element is no more. And why? Because, Mr. Valentine, last night there was a fire, and in that fire, the witch was burned.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Mr. Valentine. There ain't no such thing as witches. You know that. I don't care what Cy Orrick wrote you. He's sort of a windbag anyway.
But we wanted your opinion, Mr. Stern.
He ought to be back in his office over there pretty soon. I'm a busy man today, Miss Brooks. A couple of real estate deals.
Mr. Stearns, we can catch Orrick later, all right. But the cleaning woman at his place, Olga, says you're the man who can tell us the facts in a hurry. Says here in Mill Hollow, you're the head of the fire department.
Well, all right, come on in. Fire department. In addition to my other duties, I am proud of it. Sort of a volunteer basis. But we got three boys on regular and two trucks.
And there was a fire last night, huh?
Sit down. We even got prizes for competition with the other small-town departments. I keep them on their toes, let me tell you.
But last night, wasn't there a fire?
Mr. Valentine, let's get this absolutely straight. Yes, there was a fire. The old mill itself went up. Oh, it's nothing but a ramshackle landmark down by the creek back of Widow Lawrence's property. Good for nothing but spooners and cobwebs. Condemned it myself as a hazard 5 years ago. It went up around midnight like a four-alarmer in Hades. See the flames 10 miles. Well, when it was over, one of the boys spotted, what used to be a woman.
Was that the witch?
Miss Abby, that's her name. A couple of kids said they seen her out late, seen her sneaking up to this place, the mill.
You mean she was alone out there?
Of course, and I'm telling you from that. And the fact that I can't find a trace of intent in the fire itself, incendiarism to you, that nobody in the proper sense of it got burned, that is, by anybody else. Miss Abby just got herself trapped in an accident.
Unless she set fire to the place itself.
But I just told you that... Oh, I don't know. The witch is burned, period. That's what everybody says.
What was she doing out there anyway at that time of night?
Well, how should I know why a witch does it?
Yes, you were the one who said there aren't any such things as witches.
Well, she wasn't one, the way I remember her. I never had any trouble with Miss Abby.
How is it you do remember her, Mr. Stearns?
Doc Ransom. I suppose he could give you a better idea what made people hate her. kids be afraid of her. Made her be so ugly, the way she peered at you, shook her umbrella. Oh, little Miss Abby. And she's dead now. Out there at the mill to put a spell on the place. That's what the kids think.
Well, go on, go on. Tell me about her. What is it you remember?
Well, she was the piano teacher. Yes, piano teacher. That's the main thing. Just as nice to everybody. Never spoke a hard word. Not a whisper of gossip crossed her lips. Not for 20, 25 years, maybe. Regular institution. Just like choir practice or the town elm trees. Only, well, about a year ago, I remember, the change began. One of my daughters was taking a lesson while the wife and I listened. I remember the wife's dog, big, fat spaniel it was. He was howling along at the piano the way he always did.
One, two, three. Some under faster. Start again. One, two, three. Keep your wrist out. That's better. Four, five, six, seven,
he doesn't
eight.
Bother you, does he, Miss Abby? The dog doing that, I mean.
Dog, my lands, no. Wrist. One, two.
Be dead soon, anyway. Let him enjoy himself.
Wrist up.
One, two.
What?
Three
what was that?
Miss
no,
Abby.
No, no, no.
Miss Abby, what did you say?
Wrist up, that's it. Land.
I don't know. About the dog.
The dog. The dog.
Why, just that he'll be dead. The big fat nuisance won't whine anymore. He'll be dead very soon.
Miss Abby.
I just...
Oh. Mrs. Stearns, what's the matter? What? What did I say?
She fainted right there on the piano. I remember she came to and said it was just the heat. Nobody mentioned the dog again, of course. Oh, now look, Doc Ransom, he can tell you more than I can. I don't know how a reputation gets started. I'd warned my wife myself about that spaniel. Feeding it so much and he was so old and wheezy. It was a nuisance, too. Only, well, I'll tell you this. Next morning, the dog died.
Fred Stearns is a fool. I don't know why a sweet little lady should start saying strange things. A country doctor, Mr. Valentine, is not a psychiatrist or any highfalutin.
But Dr. Ransom, Miss Abby did change about a year ago.
Oh, the ugliness? That's glands, I suppose. And suddenly talking so much might be from the repression of the years of silence. But I never had any trouble with Miss Abby. She never cut loose on me any more than she did on Auric or the Widow Lawrence.
What do you mean, cut loose? The whole town seems to be buzzing with the idea that a witch got burned. Now, can you blame me for being curious why Miss Abby went up in such spontaneous combustion in the midst of such universal dislike?
In the midst of fire, you mean. An accident. Oh, I don't know, Mr. Valentine. Of course, there's no such thing as predicting death or being in tune with the supernatural, but...
But what?
Oh, shooting a mouth off it at funny times. A wedding rehearsal once, I remember that. Nothing to do with her or me or anything else, but just funny the way it happened, that's all. People don't even live here anymore. Miss Abby was playing the music. Anyway, just a fancy rehearsal. Everybody patting each other on the back. Big, successful marriage. Only along right in the middle of it.
No, my land, what am I playing this for? Does anybody have any idea? Why play for rehearsal of a wedding that's never going to happen? Doesn't anybody else know there's not going to be a wedding?
Oh,
doesn't anybody else know there just isn't going to be any wedding tomorrow? Because there isn't, you know. There isn't. There just isn't.
Of course there wasn't a wedding. But don't get the idea Miss Abby predicted it or put a hex on it. Well, the bride. Seems she was mixed up with some other boy, married him instead later on.
But the point is, the old lady liked to spill secrets, is that it?
I don't know how she could have known.
Well, maybe she didn't even know she was doing it or why.
Yes, it seems to me Miss Abby was just
a little crazy, eh? A lot of people thought that. It was even a growing move on to put her away. Everybody had always been so fond of her before, but I tell you, I wouldn't have wanted to sign the papers, Mr. Valentine. Yes, I might as well admit. It always seemed to me there was, maybe some method in her madness.
She was mean. That's what she was, mean and spiteful. She threw rocks at the kids.
Only when they called her names. Go on with your cleaning, Olga.
She would have got around to you sooner or later, Mr. Olga.
Mr. Valentine didn't come here to listen to gossip and superstition.
Maybe I did, Oric.
Olga here has been more help than you have, Mr. Oric.
I can see how you spent your time waiting for me. Your ears getting bigger and bigger. Quite a story, isn't it? But I had my reasons for asking you.
Yeah, well, let's hear them fast, because me, I'm going to ask what the police have to say.
That's where I've been. Whether it's smoke, there is fire. It's scarcely the appropriate expression.
What did the cops tell you, Mr. Ulrich? They knew she was a witch.
I'm sorry, but if you don't mind, I prefer a little privacy today. There. The police said nothing. They're investigating.
Uh-huh. And do you think they should investigate?
Well, Miss Abby got so she almost couldn't keep her mouth closed. Every secret she'd ever heard. Every little thing the town was unwilling to face. Of course, from my standpoint, it made a good news source for the paper, her shoutings and...
Naturally, she never attacked you, did she, Mr. Ulrich?
What?
Oh, nothing. Just that everyone we talk to seems to be an exception.
Oh. Well, it wasn't only the people she defended, or the ones she began to pry about, spy upon. And it wasn't just the ignorant reaction like Olga there, like the unkind children who told stories. No, even the nicer people began to lose patience. I was present one night at the school board meeting when we'd found it necessary to explain to Miss Abbey that her services as teacher of our little music appreciation class were no longer desired. It was really quite sad.
Gosh sakes, you explain it to her, can't you, Doc?
No. No, leave me out of it, Fred.
My lands, I don't see why you want to discharge me. I certainly don't drink like the chemistry teacher does every night or give poker parties like
that. Now, Miss Abby, never mind.
Is it because I can't stop talking? Is that it? For 20 years, I've never said a word. I've never raised my voice. But the things I've seen and the things I know inside me about people, yes, every one of you. Whether I'm a witch or not, you'll never know. But I'll get you. Yes, I will. And you'll see whether I can be got rid of. Last, that pointed tooth. I'll get you, Dr. Ransom. And you, Fred Stearns. And you, Widow Lawrence. And even you, Cy Ulrich, with your sweet little newspaper. All of you who have paid of me. Everyone!
And then last night, this poor little mixed-up lady who hated the town as much as it hated her, she dies by accident.
There's her picture. One hesitates to print the story, Mr. Valentine, that a witch would die in a fire.
Mm-hmm. Come on, Brooksy, let's go.
George, here's another place.
Sure. Charred at the base of the wall, just like the other one.
A woman could get trapped in a place like this very easily.
Not if these burn spots tell the story. Besides, what was she doing out here at the mill? Hey, look, there's another one, see?
Oh, by the door foundation. Blacker than the rest, isn't it?
Yeah. Three places burned worse than the rest. You know what that means, don't you?
Well, most accidental fires only start in one place.
Brooksy, it wasn't an accident. I'd be willing to bet on that. Miss Abby was hated and feared by the whole town. And last night she was in here and somebody set fire to her.
Last night somebody murdered her.
What?
Oh, hello, Mr. Valentine. I'm Dudley, the sheriff's office.
Oh. I didn't know you were out here.
Yes, I already got us nosing around. I didn't notice those burn spots, but... Oh, here. Dug this out of the floor.
It's the bullet.
Mm-hmm. Fired from a .38 revolver, I'd say. I dug it out of the floor right here. Yeah, about the same place where what was left of the witch was found.
So maybe somebody shot her and then set fire to the building to destroy the evidence.
Enough people around here hated Miss Abby, I guess.
Yeah, the wicked little lady who dug into their secrets and then shouted what she knew, even about the nice people, like Oryk and Stearns and Ransom and... Say, Mr. Dudley, mm-hmm. I've kept hearing about the name Widow Lawrence.
That's so? In what connection?
Well, never mind. Who is she?
The exact opposite of Miss Abby, I'd say. Keeps to herself pretty much. Straight-laced. You know, I'd never talk about other people. Richest woman in town, too, I suppose.
Yeah.
Always was loudest to say Miss Abby should be put away. Bad enough?
Uh-huh. Enough to make me want to see the Widow Lawrence right now.
Doesn't answer, George, but her door is partly open.
Small town hospitality. Mrs. Lawrence? Mrs. Lawrence? Step down for a minute.
Yeah. George, why do so many people speak of Miss Abby as a witch even after she let herself die? I mean, if you're going to talk about the supernatural, witches aren't supposed to... Hey, George.
Yeah. Mrs. Lawrence? Are you home, Mrs. Lawrence?
In here, I think, George.
Look out! Get out of my way! My land is no place, a woman. Don't touch me! Don't touch me! I'll get you! I'll get every one of you!
George, did you see?
That wasn't the Widow Lawrence.
The witch, George. Miss Abby, it was she, the witch!
Return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. Maybe sometime this month or next, you'll find yourself motoring through scenic mountain country. It may be pleasant, even cool for you. But don't forget, that kind of driving is tough on your car's engine. Those long, winding miles of steep grades mean sizzling engine temperatures, a serious threat to upper cylinder walls. Ordinary oils run away from heat like that, but not RPM motor oils. And car owners who live in the mountains will tell you more people prefer RPM than any other brand. In fact, this is the motor oil that's first choice where driving's toughest. For RPM is compounded to cling to hot metal, give you the finest engine insurance you can buy. Tomorrow, start using RPM motor oil in your car. Ask for it at independent Chevron gas stations and at standard stations where they say and mean we take better care of your car. Back to tonight's adventure of George Valentine. The Witch of Mill Hollow, Miss Abby, who for 20 years was only a shy, retiring piano teacher, and who then suddenly became a vindictive, spiteful woman, or a witch. Which is it? Yes, just what is Miss Abby? Because if your name is George Valentine, you came to Mill Hollow on the report that the witch had been burned. Yet you've just seen her, heard her scream as she ran to get away from you, to run outside in the dark.
She went this way. Listen.
No, she didn't. Here, quick, around here.
I don't see anything now, do you?
So dark, so many trees.
But she couldn't just fly away on her broomstick.
Well, it looks like she did, Angel.
Oh, stop it. She's alive. That was she in the flesh.
Of course it was, Brooksie. Don't worry, we'll find her, too. Come on back to the house.
But George,
come on. Hey, see what I mean? She'd been rifling the place, going through the desk, frantic. Stuff spilled all over.
But this is the Widow Lawrence's house.
Yeah, only what was the witch looking for here?
More important, George, where's the Widow Lawrence?
Well, Doctor, you re-examined the body?
It's the Widow Lawrence, all right. It was her body at the mill, not Miss Abby's.
Uh-huh. Well, Mr. Oryk... Now, who'd want to murder the Widow Lawrence, richest woman in town, exact opposite of the witch? The widow always kept her mouth shut.
Wait, wait, Mr. Valentine. You understand it was a logical mistake to make about the body and all, don't you?
Of course it was. The witch was generally hated, but no one had anything against Mrs. Long.
I said wait. She was murdered. Definitely murdered. I found where that bullet had scraped the bone.
Well, what do you think, Mr. Orrick?
I don't know. Isn't it possible that in the dark...
No, a person doesn't get hit by a bullet by mistake.
No, of course not.
No. It wasn't that somebody thought it was Miss Abby.
But the children, they saw Miss Abby last night.
Add it up. Don't you see what I'm driving at? We have exactly one suspect for the murder of the widow Lawrence.
Yes, yes. The only person in town who might have done such an irrational thing as to...
Hey, the witch! I saw her!
Huh?
What's that? The witch! What? Outside! Ran up into her house!
Her own place? Well, come on!
Get away from here! Get away!
There she is on the balcony.
Third floor.
Get away from that door, or I'll jump.
George.
Now, take it easy, Miss Abby. Take it easy. Nobody's going to hurt you.
Hello, Stearns.
I saw her. It was just a second ago. She came up the dark street, tried to duck in there without being spotted.
Yeah.
He's been running since yesterday. He's been hiding.
It's my fault. Should have had her locked up long ago.
Yes, why would she hide, Mr. Valentine?
Orrick, stop it.
But look at her. She must be the one. She hated Mrs. Lawrence. The widow was trying to get her sent out of town.
I said stop it. No, it's not true. You know it's not,
Miss Abby, I'm warning you.
Take it easy, Dudley.
Doctor, it's got to be. She killed
it's
her.
It's not.
No, cut couldn't. It out. Cut it out.
Mr. Valentine.
Hey, Brooksy, get over there. Tell Dudley to calm her down. Do anything, but calm her down.
Valentine, please.
All right, Doc. Let's have it fast. Your conscience has been bothering you all day. Now, what is it?
The widow Lawrence, about people hating.
Come on, hurry it up, hurry it up.
Well, I never collected a bill from the widow. I did her favors, so I loaned her money.
Now, take it easy.
The richest woman in town,
that's
huh?
That's what I mean. She never told anything. She was close-mouthed, never gossiped.
What did she have on you, Buster? What were you hiding?
Nothing much, just about some gambling when I was younger. But do you see, if people knew my
Never
practice...
mind, you said enough, friend. Okay, Dudley, let me try.
Oh, but she just stands there.
Sure, Miss Abby's out of her mind now, all right.
Valentine, wait.
Huh?
Look, don't you see it? That's why she came back here. That's why she won't let anybody near. That's smoke.
Smoke. Oh, hey,
call for the engine. I'll get her myself.
George.
She set fire to her own house.
Oh, George, she'll jump.
No, she won't, Angel. We got to take a chance. We're the ones who are going to get the witch.
George, there's smoke coming from in back, too.
Yeah, from both sides. You get out of here, Brooksy.
Get out of this building. It's built with paper.
Go on, Brooksy. Step on it. I can do it myself.
Well, all right, George, but hurry.
Come on. Hey, Stearns, wait. Where are you? Stearns!
You crazy idiot. I know what I'm doing in a place like this. You don't.
Shut up. Where is she, Stearns?
We're both crazy. Out there. Ought to be able to see her from the... Let go of me!
Stand still! If she sees us, she will jump.
And so what? The batty old banshee. Listen to her.
I am going to kill every one of you! Don't touch me!
Take it easy, lady. I wouldn't come near you for sour apples.
Hey, Valentine, look at that. There is even the gun over there. On her table, see it?
Yeah.
Come on, we're being suckers. I know what I'm talking about.
Sure, you're the expert. I know, fire chief. The guy who couldn't spot any indication of incendiarism when the mill burned. Not a trace of it, you said.
Valentine.
And I'm a rank amateur, and I found it. And now the same thing happens all over again. Fire started in several places.
Hey, listen, there's the engine.
And you say there's the same gun. Only how do you know? What gun?
Well,
Stearns, your eyes aren't that good. No, you're not going to rescue her. I am. Because you sure were busy today, Stearns. Planting the gun here, trying to find Miss Abby, trying to kill her like you killed Mrs. Lawrence.
Valentine, no. No, listen.
Miss Abby was out at the mill last night, but not as a murderess. As a witness, my friend. A witness who saw you there.
You're just guessing.
Saw you and been scared to death ever since because she knew nobody believed her. She didn't have proof. And if you think I'm wrong, Mr. Stearns, just look at the way her eyes pop every time you move a muscle.
I'm not staying here.
That's the one thing you're going to do.
Bust
it. Okay. Okay, Miss Abby. Did you hear all that? Now, look. I'm a stranger, Miss Abby. I won't hurt you.
No, don't touch me. I was... Witches. Witches. Don't...
Hey, yep. Okay, lady. And we'll just let somebody else rescue the fire chief.
Yes, Brooks, that's the way it was. I saw them out there that night at the mill. They were having a fight, the widow and Mr. Stern.
Only he saw you, too. Is that right, Miss Abby?
Sure, Brooksy, he admitted it. Tell me something, Miss Abby. Let me ask you what you were doing out there. It was midnight, a deserted place.
Well, the spying on them, naturally.
Oh, I see.
They were up to no good, I could tell. Been meeting out there for years, so nobody would be suspicious.
What was she blackmailing him for, George?
Oh, I can tell you. Found someone over at her house. He'd made crooked real estate deals, that's what. And money off the fire department, too.
Oh.
You see, Fred Stearns came from a family of three boys. And every one of them has a piece of scandal that you could cut with a...
Look, please, never mind that.
Well, don't you want to hear about it? And about the other nice ones, too. Mr. Silas Orrick and Dr.
Miss Abby, I'm only interested in putting together a crime.
Well...
Yeah. Stearns fought with a widow and killed her. In passion, he claims. Then he was terrified with a witness running loose. Even if it was a witch... excuse me, I'm sorry. He got his one feeble chance at you when you came back to your own house blind with fear. He knew he'd be caught if he just plain murdered you, so he set your house on fire and set up the alarm, knowing that as fire chief, he'd have first crack at you. He could perform your rescue in the most ungentlemanly manner.
Well, of course. Now, let me tell you about Cy Orrick and Dr. Ranton.
Miss Abby, really.
They
what
are
they
displayed.
Did was very important.
Miss Abby, look, please, can't you understand that everybody has little secrets? Oh, sure, the widow Lawrence, she capitalized on them in a small town, but...
20 years I kept quiet. Never said anything. Besides, every word I said is true.
But look, you overstate it. It gets so that you hate the world as much as it hates you. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, why should you be? I see things, that's all. Now, I mean, like you, Miss Brooks.
Hmm?
I've noticed it between you and Mr. Valentine.
Now you're doing it again. Stop it.
All right. I don't really want to be the witch of Mill Hollow. What about you, too?
Now, George, why should she stop? You go on, Miss Abby, just this once about us. What was it you were going to say?
Wait.
No!
Before you start out on your vacation motoring trip, you can read all kinds of books and literature about the places you'll visit. But for helpful, up-to-date information as you travel, depend on the men who know the locality, the men at Standard Stations and Independent Chevron gas stations. You may want to know where there's a hardware store, a druggist, or what sightseeing trips you should take in some areas. At all these service stations, you'll get friendly, courteous answers fast. And here, for your convenience, you're always sure of finding restrooms that are clean and tidy. For these restrooms are inspected often, re-cleaned, and well supplied with soap and towels. So remember, when you start on your vacation, for local information and convenience, depend on Independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations, where they say and mean, we take better care of your car. Tonight's adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard Oil Company of California on behalf of Independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West. Robert Bailey is starred as George with Virginia Gregg as Brooksy. Let George Do It is written by David Victor and Jackson Gillis and directed by Don Clark. Loreen Tuttle was heard as Miss Abby, Ted Osborne as Orrick, Joe Duvall as Stearns, Larry Dobkin as Ransom, Gigi Pearson as Mrs. Stearns, and Bill Boucher as Dudley. The music is composed and presented by Eddie Dunstetter. Your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
Johnny Madero, Pier 23. You know, it doesn't pay to buy a fast car in San Francisco because most of the time you got to be in low gear. The town is laid out like the profile of a chorus line, and the only time it flattens out is where it runs into the bay. The waterfront goes from south of the ferry building out past the China docks, and on a clear day you can see them batting baseballs over on Alcatraz. Pier 23 is over toward the left field sign, and not far from there you'll find Johnny Madero's boat shop. My place. Oh, I rent boats, and I do anything else that means long odds and short hours. It's a way to make a living. And if you never save enough to get married, at least you got enough to leave town. Maybe I should have left town Monday afternoon. I bought a paper, and I read about a buildup on a heavyweight fight in L.A. I stopped in at Lofty's, and the boys said neither one of those fighters could beat an egg with a power drill. About 3 o'clock, I started down Post Street when I spotted a new auction house. It was small, with enough dough-changing hands to buy back Manhattan Island. Inside, it was packed, and up on a wooden stand, a bald-headed guy was selling everything but his suspenders. So I sat down in back, and I noticed a girl standing up against the wall. She was wearing dark green sunglasses, but the rest of her was just about as secret as a plow on the bathroom floor. Her hair was the color of half past midnight, and her dress was made of the kind of goods you buy from spiders. After a while, she walked over to me. Right away, she started to get nervous, and when you look like her, you got a right to be.
Mind if I sit down?
They're your legs, lady. If you want to rest them, rest them.
Thanks. You seem to like the view.
Just temporary. I'm leaving.
Will you get excited if I ask you to stay?
Are you going
to
be proud if I do?
Please. I want you to do me a favor. It won't take long. It'll be a small one.
How small?
They're going to auction off a black leather suitcase in a few minutes. It belongs to me. I must have it back.
You speak the language. Do your own bidding, huh?
I don't want someone to know I'm here. It's important. I'll pay you $50 to bid for me.
You just hired me.
Just start bidding and keep on bidding till you get that suitcase. I want it at any price.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's a special item of interest. A black leather suitcase arrived yesterday. Contents unknown. It's handsome. It's beautiful. It's never been opened. Now, who's got sporting blood? The leather alone is worth at least $25. And it's heavy. It's heavy. It could be full of bricks and it could be full of gold. That's what makes it interesting. Now, who's going to start the bidding? Who's going to start it off with a big one?
$2.
Come on. That's an insult. $2? Who'll give 15?
$10.
$10. Who'll give 30? $10. Who'll give 30?
Start pitching for our team, mister.
$25.
$50.
Double it.
$100.
$100. The man in the gallery bids $100. You heard him, folks. $100. Who'll give two?
$200.
$200.
You got competition, lady.
I got you. Keep doubling.
$400.
$400. That man in the gallery's got second vision. He knows what the suitcase is worth. The bid's $400. Who'll give $800? Four. Who'll give eight?
$800.
$800. The man in front here says eight. Who'll give $1,000? The bid's $800. Who'll give $1,000?
Go ahead. Surprise the man.
The OPA won't like this.
You're working for me now. Make it $1,000.
$1,000.
$1,000. The man in back bids $1,000. Who'll give $1,500? $1,000. Who'll give $1,500? All right. $1,000 once. $1,000 twice. $1,000 for the third and last time. Oh, true bidding. Show it to the men in the gallery. Please come up and sign this price now.
Here's the money. Pick it up and come back. I'll be waiting.
Yeah.
And don't let him open it. Whatever you do, don't let him open it.
It's your party, lady. I won't even let him peek.
There's the lucky man coming down the aisle now. Give him room. Give him room. Here he is. And here's your suitcase, mister. Want to open it and tell the folks what's inside?
Yeah, what's in it, Mac?
Just one of my relatives. Here's the dough.
Yeah, sure. All right. Now we have another item here.
Oh. Sorry, son. I was just going for the empty seat.
Yeah, we'll wait for your blockers next time, Pop. Where's the girl? The brunette with the dark glasses?
It's a jail term, son. I don't follow him home anymore.
Well, she was here a minute ago. You must have seen her leave.
No.
Think about it. She must have walked right past you. Think about it.
No, son. When you get to be my age, you don't even do that.
I felt kind of silly, the same way you do when you find a hole in your sock at the shoe store. But it wasn't my dough that bought that case, so I couldn't beef much. When I got back to the office, I started working on the lock with the key. The case was made of plain black leather, and it was kicked around more than Minnie's gong. Then I opened it. A shiny-looking saxophone was laid out in three parts. For $1,000, you can buy a whole brass section. So I went through each piece looking for a reason. There was a paper box inside the case. It had a gross of reeds in it. Same kind you find on the mouthpiece of any saxophone. I couldn't do much more, so I wrapped up the case and put it up in my closet. Then the door opened, and if trouble had a face, this was the way it looked in the morning. He stood there in the middle of the room, and his eyes held me like a fly at the end of two needles. He noticed his eyebrows. They were bushy and thick, and if they got any worse, he'd have to hire a native guide.
Hello, you, Modelo?
That's my story. You got a better one?
It's sadder than yours. I'm the guy you left behind at the auction. Who are you bidding for?
Who are you asking for?
Myself.
I suppose we get real friendly. What's your name?
Dunlap, Larry Dunlap. Now, introduce me to the girl who was coaching you.
All right. She was a souped-up brunette with a disappearing act. Now, what does that prove?
Unless you find her in a cemetery, never trust a woman. Especially Claire Underwood.
Yeah. What do you want from me?
I'll take that black leather suitcase you won at the auction.
Look, I saved you some dough. Don't make a pig of yourself. Try to be nice.
I will. I won't kick you when you're dead. Where's that suitcase? You're making me nervous.
So if you got an itch, see a doctor. What makes you so big?
Vitamins. I know all about the Sachs, Madero. It belongs to me. Give it to me or I start looking.
You better have a license. A Sachs isn't that important.
It is to me. Maybe I want to start a hock shop.
I'll hold out for your girlfriend. She owes me $50 and I need the dough.
I'll double anything she gives you.
If you mean money, give me a hint.
Will $100 do?
Yeah. The Sachs is in the closet on top here. Come on. Give me a hand. Give me
sure,
a hand.
Madero, sure. You've got a hand, Madero. Now play it out.
Some days you're not going to make out any better than an ice cube at a cocktail party. When Dunlap hit me, I folded up and my head got the size of a social worker's heart. Well, I started tossing around on the rug. It took me longer to stop than it took Haig to quit Jersey. I knew that Sachs was gone, so there was no point in getting up. I started dreaming about that day a Cleveland bellhop gave me a key to the wrong room. It was going all right, too, until somebody began shaking me. In that small room, I didn't have to look up to know who it was, because Inspector Warcheck of San Francisco Homicide is the kind of guy you stand next to in a hurricane and wonder what happened to the ventilation.
Making a wish, Madero?
Yeah, here, so it didn't come true. What are you collecting?
Alibis. What's yours for last night at 12 o'clock?
I was in bed.
You got a witness?
No, you can't win them all.
Yeah, that's the way a guy named Charlie Reiser felt.
So maybe it's an epidemic.
So maybe you started it. Someone shot him dead. The guy was a musician.
Try some of the neighbors.
I'll try you first.
You're reaching, Warcheck. I never even heard of the guy.
Oh, that's a handicap, Madero. Maybe you just heard of his instrument, huh?
All right, let me guess. It was a sax.
Hey, you're very bright. An auctioneer helped me trace it down to you. Now, what's the pitch?
A wild one, Warcheck. A dame forced me to do her a favor.
Uh-huh. I bet you force easy.
She paid me to bid for the sax and then took a potter after I won it.
You got an active memory. Does it include a name?
Yeah. Claire Underwood. Run it down and see what it gets you.
Oh, now stop threatening me, Madero. I think that sax is tied in with the murder. Now, where is it?
You're a little late. A torpedo named Larry Dunlap just walked in and sapped me for it.
Yeah? How hard did he sap you, Madero?
Hmm?
There's a pool of blood behind your desk, and it doesn't look like yours. How'd it get there?
I don't know, Warcheck. Maybe somebody got lost and figured it was a blood bank. How do I know?
Yeah. Maybe they thought it was a morgue, too. Left a body. Now look around.
Yeah, do that. Look under the rug, too. Maybe the guy was thin.
All right, Madero. So far, you're in the clear. But if there's blood, there must be a body close by. It'll show. When it does, we'll turn it in for yours.
I'll remember.
Like you remember that $1,000?
Huh?
The auction house, Madero. The $1,000 you gave the joint got homesick and left.
I'm broke, Warcheck.
Yeah?
You'll have to stand on your head to pin this on me.
Maybe I will.
Maybe you're right. I forgot about your head. Once Warcheck sticks to you, you might as well try to pull a mustard plaster off a throw rug. He stood there for a minute, blinking at the light, and you could see big pebbles of sweat standing out on his forehead. He took a handkerchief out of his pocket, and when it came down, it was wet enough to wash all the windows in Lower Manhattan. After a while, he walked out. I watched him out of the window. I tried to figure how I got into this. It was like trying to trace back a conversation to see what word started it. There were lots of questions, and not too much time. Why was a saxophone and a grocer Reed's worth all that dough? And who left his blood on my rug as a deposit? The girl must have known what was in the case, but why did she leave it with me? Oh, I couldn't make it add up, so I looked up the only good guy I know, a waterfront priest named Father Leahy. He knows most of the bad boys around the piers, and he's heard enough sins to start an art colony. Around Lofty's, they got his name above the line, and that's a tough trick, because along the waterfront, an archangel couldn't get a cup of coffee without hucking a wing. I found him over at the parish house having dinner.
Hello, Johnny. You want some wine?
No, thanks, Father.
That's one of the good things about this job. You get wine with your meals.
Yeah, I know.
Except you got to watch out. I knew a guy in the seminary liked to eat between meals.
Yeah, yeah.
But the bishop fixed him. He sent him to a rich parish, and the guy had to throw away half his sermons.
I'm in trouble, Father.
Did you buy elevator shoes, or is that a bump on your head?
Somebody knocked me down when I wasn't looking.
Did you get the license number?
It just felt like a truck. I got hit with a club. That's why I want you to help me, Father.
Johnny, you misinterpret my mission in life. You need a policeman. I'm only a priest. Besides, I'm eating.
Look, Father, homicide wants to tack a murder on me.
There goes my appetite. Who's dead? Anybody I could have helped?
His name was Charlie Reiser. He was a musician.
If he's going in the right direction, he may get some work. How did you meet him?
I didn't. I never heard of the guy. It was all a surprise to me.
Sounds more like a shock.
I got a bum shake from the start, Father. A gal with a big purse promised to pay me something if I'd bid for a black suitcase at an auction.
What was the matter with her? Laryngitis?
She was trying to keep somebody from noticing her, but she must have weakened in the final stretch.
What do you mean?
I won the bid with $1,000, but when I came back, the gal was gone.
And you were left holding the bag. What was in it?
A saxophone and a gross of reeds. You could buy the whole outfit with a $5 down payment.
What makes it worth $1,000?
I don't know, Father. The sax belonged to Charlie Reiser. A guy named Dunlap offered me $200 for it.
All that money for a saxophone, and they wouldn't allow me $40 on that old organ.
Dunlap slugged me when my back was turned and piled up a lead.
Did the sax go for free?
Somebody paid for it. When I woke up, there was a lot of blood on the floor.
Yours?
It was unclaimed, but I have an idea a body's going to turn up without it.
You have nothing but murder on your mind, Johnny. Why don't you settle down with a good book?
If Warcheck tags me, I'll have to borrow yours, Father. Right now, I need you to check on a few people for me.
Sure, but I'll need a couple of names for them first.
You know a lot of the combo boys, Father. Check up on Charlie Reiser's friends, especially his women. And find out where Larry Dunlap fits in. Will you do it, Father?
Yes, Johnny, I'll do it. But if I find out you're calling him wrong, I'll drop over to Warcheck's side.
Thanks, Father. If you help me out of this, you're a good guy. You're an angel.
But stop pushing me. I'm not that anxious yet.
When I left Father Leahy, I ran over my leads. You could have counted them on one finger, and you'd still have to cheat. The only guy worth looking up was the auctioneer on Eddy Street. Maybe that was all revenge. Why did he tell Warcheck that I took that $1,000 back? Well, I figured I'd find out, so I grabbed a cab back to his store. When I got there, the joint was locked up, but a big neon sign blinked the name J.C. Cole. There was another light coming from the back, so I followed it down. Inside, Cole was working over his cash register tape. I didn't knock, and right away he started making funny noises in his throat. I noticed he was wearing a vest without a tie, and his sleeves were rolled up with big rubber bands. His elbows stuck out, and they were red and knotted up like a baby's face with cramps. And then he made his opening bid.
It's a little late. What can I sell you, mister?
A straight story.
Huh?
The one you told headquarters had too many frills.
Hey, wait a minute. You're the same fellow who bought that suitcase.
You got a good head, friend. How good is it on robbery?
It was dark. I thought it was you, so I called the cops.
You started fast, but you're fading in the stretch.
$1,000 was gone. I figured you took your money back.
That's an early mistake. It wasn't my dough.
You sound like you're mad. Is that a gun in your pocket, huh?
If it makes you talk about that suitcase, I'll say yes.
I don't know what you mean. I said you were taking your chances. A ton of bricks, a ton of gold, remember? I got to make a living, you know.
You don't have to crowd them in. What gives a sax a $1,000 price tag?
I don't know, I tell you. I don't know what thing.
Yeah, well, we'll go into politics later. I think you're lying.
It was just another suitcase, an old leather suitcase with a sax inside. I just tell you, I don't know a thing.
Yeah, keep it up, fella. You'll tell me everything that way. Now, how did you know there was a sax in that case if you never opened it?
Well, Now, listen, mister, let's be friends. I got a little money. Let's be friends.
Go on.
I was just trying to get a little ahead. I got a wife and a kid, a big kid, so I switched saxophones. I took out the original sax with the reeds and put in an older one.
What'd you do with the original?
It was a pretty nice one, brand new, so I sold it to someone, reeds and all, for $200.
You're slowing down. Who's someone, a relative?
He's a friend named Bud, Bud Overbeck. He plays tenor sax at the Downbeat Club. That original was something special, huh?
Yeah, you should have held out for $1,000 on both ends.
Now, listen, fella, Bud's a friend, a good friend on my wife's side. You won't hurt him, will you?
I'll send you a pint if he bleeds.
Yeah, sure. I'll save it. Anything else, huh?
Yeah. Stop stuttering. You'll give that kid of yours a complex. When he opened the door, you could tell he wanted to shake me worse than a summer cold. I didn't like him any better, but he'd given me something solid to work on. So I got over to the Club Downbeat. It's a jazz cellar that warms over King Oliver at 6 bits a throw. Five-piece combo was writing a chorus slow and easy, and you knew the only notes they ever read were on IOUs. There were a dozen or so jazz fans huddled around the bandstand, and if you looked real close at their faces, you saw something that looked like pain. I asked the bartender who Overbeck was, and he pointed out the blonde kid with a face made of warm putty playing a black saxophone. I walked backstage to a small dressing room where the boys grabbed their second wind with a short one. When I opened the door, Claire Underwood stood there holding her breath.
Hello, Johnny. You look angry. Put away those daggers, hmm?
I will, baby. I'll guess that you killed Reiser for a saxophone.
Guess again. Why should I kill anyone for a sax?
Tell me why it's worth a grand, and I'll answer that one, too.
All right, Johnny. I'm sentimental. Say Charlie Reiser was my boyfriend, and I wanted to keep his sax as a memory.
Must have been quite a memory, baby.
You didn't meet Charlie.
But I did meet Larry Dunlap. He wanted the sax, too. Why?
How would I know, Johnny? Maybe he was taking lessons.
They weren't that kind. He has too good a lip.
So have I. Only I use it differently.
All right, stop puckering, sweetheart. I want some sense now.
Please, Johnny. If you leave now, I'll give you double what I owe you from the auction.
That's not enough. Look, baby, count up your bills and tell me what a murder rap is worth, huh?
We'll haggle over it later, Johnny. Just meet me at the Ajax Hotel, and I promise you, you'll get a better figure.
Yeah. You gonna add some interest?
Come here, and I'll show you what I mean.
I'm not running a service. I need some answers. Come on, come on. I want some action. Come on.
Use your arms, Johnny.
You got too big a mouth, baby. Somebody's gonna close it on you.
Show me, Johnny.
All right.
The music stopped, Johnny.
What do you care? We're not dancing.
Johnny, please, you're squeezing me too tight.
Yeah, it's a bad habit. Now tell me about that sax.
Listen to me, Johnny. I told you I got to see Overbeck first. I'll tell you everything later.
Yeah, after you talk Overbeck out of his sax, huh?
Yes. Is it a deal?
You're too anxious to sign. I'll talk to Overbeck myself.
All right, Johnny. I'll help you get him here quicker.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Scream, Johnny. Scream. Listen.
Louder, baby. You'll really need it in a minute.
Help! Help! Help!
Hey, what's the matter? What was she screaming about, mister?
She couldn't catch me.
This man's drunk. He was trying to snatch my purse.
Is that true, mister?
Call a cop and find out.
Yeah, I will.
No, no. Please, don't bother. Just get him out. Just throw him out, Mr. Overbeck.
You heard the lady, mister. Do I get rough?
Save your strength, Overbeck. You'll need it later. Claire had a nice act, if you didn't mind playing straight man to a vulture. She draped herself on Overbeck's arm, and she looked as cool as a vacation in Maine. As I walked out, Overbeck was still showing his teeth, but it didn't matter, because you got the idea he wasn't strong enough to fight off a sneeze. Well, there wasn't much I could do except wait for Claire to show, but it started to drizzle, so I figured my best bet was her hotel. In the lobby, a rose-colored carpet with a touch of yellow jaundice led to the desk. The clerk told me she hadn't come in yet, but for $5 he could tell I was a friend, and he gave me her key. I went upstairs, and when I opened Claire's door, I knew something was wrong. A lot of towels were thrown all over the floor, and everything was gone from the closet but the mothballs. Claire had skipped, and before I could walk out, Dunlap walked in. One hand was in his pocket, and the other had enough tape to wrap up a mummy.
Can I come in, Madame?
You're old enough, Dunlap. Make up your own mind.
I have. Where's Claire?
You're early. I think she's still busy.
Give me a magazine. I'll wait.
It'll be a long one. I'm not hanging around.
Oh, the fun's just beginning. Sit down. Sit down.
I guess I am tired.
Yeah, this gun makes everybody drowsy. Now, what's your tie with Claire?
Nothing that's deep-rooted. Are you writing a column?
Yeah, the obituary, and you're going to make the morning deadline.
You're too cocky, Dunlap. Don't turn your back.
I won't. Claire blew her chance. The best she could do was disarm.
Yeah, you ruined my carpet.
When they pass your cup around, I'll be generous. In the meantime, you're going to stick around until Claire brings that black saxophone.
I hope she's got some food in the icebox.
What do you mean?
Well, if you're waiting for that sax, we're going to starve to death. Claire's not going to show.
What makes you a prophet?
A guy named Bud Overbeck. He had the sax last, and Claire was working him over for it.
I'll work you over for less. What are the rest of her plans?
She was warm. Maybe she left a smoke signal.
All right. You're getting too stubborn.
Put away the gun, Dunlap. You can only use one arm.
I'll clean the bases with this index finger. Pick a spot to fall.
Hey, don't clutter up the floor now, Dunlap. We got company.
Hey, what's this? The wrong room? Claire said we'd be alone.
We are. Just the three of us.
Who's he, Madero?
What are you talking about? Claire told me to come here. She told me to wait for her.
Look, fella, save your lip for another chorus. Just tell me where she left you.
I don't feel so good. She was at the Downbeat Club. She was helping me put my sacks away. I just came up here to wait. We were going to be alone.
All right, fella. I'm cutting down the crowd. You with Madero now? I'm leaving.
Yeah, I'm going home, too. I feel sick. I'm going home.
You'll never make it on your knees. What's the matter?
I don't know. I guess I gave the new horn too big a ride tonight. I got a weak heart.
Your eyes aren't too strong either. You're walking right into that closet.
They told me not to play so hard. Maybe I played too hard. Help me, fella. You look familiar. I seen you somewhere, huh? You look fuzzy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel sick. Someone must have slipped me something. I never felt like this before. I'm sick. real sick. I'm...
You'll never get any sicker, fella. Overbeck was dead even before he had a chance to see if Gabriel paid his boy's scale. He hit the floor and turned over on his back, and you figured he'd cross the River Jordan with a backstroke. I got a good look at him now. His face was all twisted up like bedsheets after a nightmare, and up near his hairline, a long, thin scar ran into his scalp. Well, I didn't know what killed Overbeck, but whatever it was, he didn't get 2 weeks' notice. I figured if homicide caught me here, I'd get my walking papers, too, right down to the last 20 feet. I started for the door, but Warchick opened it for me. He looked at the body and then over to me.
You on a spree, Madero?
If you're footing the bill, Warchick.
The state will from now on. Now tell me about the guy on the floor.
He's dead.
Must have had parents. What's his name?
Bud Overbeck. He was a musician at the Downbeat Club.
Yeah. Tell me some more.
Roll him, Warchick. Maybe he's got a diary.
All right. Here's his wallet. All right, Madero. How long you been here?
Why?
The wallet's empty.
Well, that's too bad. Your girlfriend's going to have to get along in last week's presents.
I trail a guy named Dunlap up to this apartment, and I find you and a dead body. Now, there's a tie, any way you look at it. Mm-hmm. That is what happened.
I don't know, Warchick. I didn't see the picture. I just tagged by for the end. You know?
Must have been a sad one. I think he's poisoned. I don't like the look in his eyes.
Get the girl who put it there.
Well, just give me a hint, huh?
Overbeck was playing caveman with Claire Underwood before he came up here.
What does that give him besides hair?
Maybe a Mickey. When I left, she was warming up an argument for his saxophone.
She get it?
She didn't. Dunlap's losing man hours. He just walked out of here, and I think she's in his list.
Yeah. I'm beginning to get an idea now myself.
Does it hurt?
You and the Underwood girl are running some kind of a racket with that saxophone. She left you behind her front for her.
You haven't seen her, Warchick. She doesn't need that kind of help.
But you will when I get through checking. Still got a few calls to make, and I want the lab to work over the body. By then, I'll have enough to come back and hold you, Madero.
You couldn't hold a lap dog with a suction pump.
All right, big shot. I'll go a long way to get you for this, a long way.
You got the drag, Warchick.
Yeah. It's going to slow you down a little.
Warchick wanted to mother the body until the coroner came, and when I left, he was squeezing himself into a chair. He fit tighter than a whale in a crib. Well, you could word it any way you like, but the big riddle was that saxophone. Claire had it, and Dunlap wanted it, and a couple of guys died for it. My only alibi was Dunlap, but you might as well ask Kahn to hold still for Lewis. I buzzed back to the office, but there was no message from Father Leahy. So I stared out the window for a while, wondering how to bake a cake with a dynamite charge when the phone rang. Yeah?
Hello, Johnny. This is Father Leahy.
What'd you find out, Father?
It's not pleasant, Johnny. I'm down at the morgue. The lab report on Bud Overbeck just came in.
He died of poisoning, huh, Father?
The bitter kind. Overbeck's heart couldn't stand all that dope.
Hmm?
Coroner found a used saxophone reed in Overbeck's pocket. It was soaked in hop.
So that's what made that saxophone so big. The grosser reeds.
That's right, Johnny. Overbeck was absorbing the stuff while he played.
Oh.
He probably never knew what hit him.
Well, what about Reiser? How does he figure?
Reiser was making his pin money peddling dope to nightclubs. He was getting his shipments from Mexico.
How did Claire and Dunlap figure?
They were a couple of partners who wanted to ease out Reiser and go into business for themselves.
The idea must have gone to Claire's head. She's doing a solo now, and Dunlap thinks she has the sax.
Warchick feels the same way about you, Johnny. He's out to tag you for everything.
He's smarter than that.
I don't know him that well. But it adds up in his book because he thinks you're leaving town.
Hmm?
Someone's booked a passage on the 2 a.m. plane for Mexico this morning in the name of Jay Madero.
I'm being jockeyed, Father. It's either Claire or Dunlap. They're both as black as sin.
Maybe so, but Warchick still thinks you're the dark horse.
Up until now, it was like trying to sell a toupee to a ball-headed eagle. But when the turn comes, everything happens in a hurry, and you began breaking more records than a disc jockey with a hangover. If Father Leahy was right, Clara Dunlap had enough dreams in that saxophone to start a waltz contest, and I knew if they both got out of town, Warchick would be around to tag me for the last dance. So I got out to Mills Field, and out on the far end of the strip, a twin-engine plane was warming up. Clara was standing with her back toward me, and even from here, you could see what a stiff tailwind could do to a landing gear. When she saw me, she raised her eyebrows and figured her temperature was even higher.
Sorry I had to borrow your name, Johnny.
You're too small for it, baby.
I got a big ego.
And that gun bolsters it, huh?
That's my story.
Well, tell it to Homicide. They'll take a nibble on either you or Dunlap.
Better throw them Dunlap. I got a date in Mexico City.
It's a blind one, baby. You're going in the wrong direction.
Larry, what are you doing here? I thought you...
I want those reeds, baby.
You'll be peddling pencils when I'm through with you.
I'll leave the sights too, baby. I'll be lonely.
You won't need that kind of music where you're going, Larry.
You're the ones that talk, baby. I trusted you. We were going to do this together. I trusted you.
We all make mistakes. You got the short end.
I'll stretch it a little. You got another chance. Let's team up again.
Sorry, Larry. I'm crowding you out.
You only think so.
Now get out of my way. I got to make the plane.
Make a grave first. I want that stuff.
I won't miss again. Stay away, Larry.
Put up a sign.
Yeah.
You missed again. Give me the gun.
No, I'm selfish. I'll hold on. Pull him off me, Madera. Pull him off.
There's a lot.
All right, baby. You run out of chances. It's my turn now.
No. Please, Larry. Put the gun away. You win. I'll split it with you now. You win. Honest, Larry, you win.
Just to show you I agree.
You're through, guy. Drop the gun.
Yeah. Well, what are the odds of my getting away in that plane?
70-30, maybe.
Things are too tough at 50-50. Come on, I'll ride downtown with you.
Well, Dunlap told the whole story down at headquarters. It seems that Reiser, Claire, and he were buying dope from Mexico and peddling it here in the form of soaked-up reeds. Reiser was contact man in Mexico, but the only way they knew him down there was by his black saxophone. Claire and Dunlap decided to narrow the profits down to two by shooting Reiser and taking over. Claire used the gun, and, well, that started her to thinking that she could do even better with a single act. She needed that black sax, though. Reiser got wind of it and hid the sax with the reeds in the basement. His landlady found it after he was tumbled and sold it to that auction house. And Claire had me buy it and followed me back to the office where she tried to peg down Dunlap. The sax she took turned out to be a phony because the auctioneer had already sold the black one to Bud Overbeck. The track was switched to him, but not soon enough. Overbeck didn't know the reeds were loaded, and after an all-night jam session, he folded up with a heart attack. Well, Warchek asked only one question. Wasn't it tough luck for an innocent guy like Overbeck? I don't know. At least there was one time he played right out of this world.
Johnny Madero, Pier 23, starring Jack Webb as Johnny Madero, has been presented by the Mutual Network. Johnny Madero is written by Herb Margolis and Lou Morheim. Gail Gordon played Father Leahy, and Bill Conrad played Inspector Warchek of Homicide. Others in the cast were Helene Burke, Bob Holton, Herb Butterfield, Irvin Lee, and Herb Rawlinson. Original music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman, and the entire production was directed by Nat Wolf. We invite you to listen again next week over most of these stations when Mutual presents another adventure in the life of Johnny Madero, Pier 23. Tony Lofrano speaking.
This program came to you from Hollywood. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That's it for this episode of Case Closed. Hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Let George Do It. I think we've got one more episode from Johnny Madero. Past episodes of this podcast and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. You'll also find a link there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. My thanks as always to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.